This podcast of The Treatment is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM and webcasting at kcrw.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, director Curtis Hanson, is known for doing a number of films that he has written or collaborated on the screenplays for, including the Oscar-winning L.A. Confidential. His new film, In Her Shoes, is written by Susanna Grant, and Curtis is here to talk about it. Curtis, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here again, Elvis.
Tell us, first of all, what the movie's about.
It's about two sisters who, on the surface, appear to be opposites, played by Cameron Diaz and Toni Collette. And one of the things I found so fascinating about it is that even though they appear to be opposites, once you break them apart, as happens in the story, and they each go their individual ways, you find out that, in fact, underneath, they're exactly the same in terms of the issues that they're dealing with, the themes that the picture deals with, self-awareness, self-image, and the yearning for human connection and a yearning for family.
It's funny to me because so many of your films are about that kind of ostensible difference between people who turn to, in some ways, to be fairly similar. We look at L.A. Confidential to some extent, Bad Influence, a little bit. We can say that about any number of things you've done, even Silent Partner. That sort of two halves completing a whole is something that thematically we can find in your movies.
It's interesting. I hadn't traced it back that far, Elvis. I certainly see the connection to L.A. Confidential, you know, to characters who are saying, who am I and how do I become a better version of that person? And part of what excited me about Susanna's adaptation of Jennifer Weiner's novel was that they were women, you know. And the other major character to mention is played by Shirley MacLaine, the grandmother that they didn't know they had. And she, too, is struggling with issues and is also haunted by the past and has the same yearning for family. And I think, you know, that's very much the human condition. It's kind of what interests me in life is people undergoing self-examination and questioning themselves. I think the only time people don't do that is when they're so self-satisfied that they are busy telling everybody else what to do.
But that's a kind of a genre of American film too, though, the kind of character who's constantly explaining himself. But facades being pulled aside, being pulled away, and us seeing a pure version of that character really, for me, does resonate in your films. I wonder if there are films you go back to or pieces of material that bring this to mind for you.
I don't know. I mean, I can, as you ask the question, I can probably think of pictures that are like that. I'm not consciously aware of them influencing me. Mm-hmm. You know, I love old movies, as you know. And one of the things I love about them is the way very often the character comes first, you know. And because of that, they provided so many great parts for wonderful actors, and not just the leading actors, but also the supporting actors.
Sure, which is kind of the case here too, I think, in Her Shoes. It's a real environment, which I think is kind of crucial to you too, isn't it, that we enter an environment in these films?
Yes. I would say what attracts me to material first and foremost are the people and the themes. But then the second thing is the world that those people inhabit. I love going into a world, especially one that's unfamiliar to me, and really absorbing as much as I can of it and then communicating back what is relevant to the story that we're trying to tell. And also, hand in hand with that, creating or trying to create a world for the movie so that the movie feels unique unto itself. And that's something, when I think back to the movies that I love from the past, that they all accomplished. You know, they have a special feel no matter what the setting of the movie is.
Turkin to Curtis Hanson, his new film is In Her Shoes. But it's interesting, too, and was ostensibly, and now this has been added to the Oxford English Dictionary now, the phrase chick flick, to have in a chick flick something that happens that becomes a test of character or a test of these people.
Chick flick. That's actually in the Oxford Dictionary.
It is now. It's just been recently added to it.
It's funny. Well, you know, there was a time when movies that starred women were not as unusual as they are today, and was all about Eve, a chick flick. You know, I don't know that it they were labeled in the same way that they are today.
It would be now, but
it would be now.
But
yes.
It's so unusual now for women to be treated as movie stars and to hold the center of a movie.
Well, that's sad but true. You know, sad but true. And again, that was part of the thing that was exciting about this was the opportunity to cast three leads, you know, three more or less equal leads with three great actors, female actors, and give them an opportunity to really do their stuff.
I guess I'm seeing, though, in your last few movies, too, a real kind of shift, not just from you're moving away from writing so much, but also and you're working with movie stars.
It's a great opportunity to work with a star when you're trying to do material that's unusual, mm-hmm. because even though I was fortunate enough to get some leverage by making a couple of movies that were successful at the box office, and I was able to use that leverage to initiate and get L.A. Confidential made, a filmmaker rarely has the leverage to do it alone. And it really helps when you have a movie star who's a partner with you in an enterprise. I never could have gotten Wonder Boys made, for example, if Michael Douglas hadn't significantly cut his fee to get it made. And the same with In Her Shoes. Cameron Diaz wanted to make the movie very badly, and it's a very unusual picture for her. And she cut her fee very significantly to do it, as did I and my producing partner. And that's how we got the picture made.
We're talking to director Curtis Hanson. His new film is In Her Shoes. You're listening to The Treatment. I'm just wondering about that. This all fascinates me so much because in so many movies you've done, you've chosen actors who we would think of, for the most part, as being kind of character actors, be it a James Spader or Rebecca De Mornay, and now in this case, having actors who, as audiences, we bring a certain kind of association with. What that does for you as a filmmaker, what kinds of balances do you try to strike to get people to drop thinking of Cameron Diaz and try to have them enter that world you're creating with her?
Well, that's an interesting question in terms of this particular movie, Elvis, because it kind of goes both ways in a sense, because who better than Cameron Diaz to, on the surface, to play this character who is able to cruise by in life based on what she looks like and the way that men react to her. You know, I mean, Cameron so embodies that and clearly so understands all the advantages of that. But she also understands the disadvantages, the limitations. And my question prior to teaming up with her to make the movie was she fully prepared to go to the dark side behind that facade and play the reprehensible acts that this character commits and be as selfish and self-centered and manipulative as she is in the early part of the picture? And at the same time, we have Shirley MacLaine, who there's no one with a more powerful persona than Shirley MacLaine. I mean, we've been... She's been in our lives for several decades, and all of us movie lovers, she starred – I mean, personally, I can say she starred in probably three of my favorite movies made
which,
over the
– Which three?
Well, The Apartment, certainly. Some Came Running, Being There, and we're not even mentioning
– Any of the Hitchcock movies.
The Trouble with Harry, you know, her debut. And the question was not just would she overpower this character because of our past associations with her, but she's big in her personality and her talent, and the character is small. The character's quiet. You know, the character is someone who is hiding from life. And I put it to her very bluntly before offering her the part, you know, that I on the one hand was excited about the potential, but it would only be exciting if she could really hold herself down in a sense and try and hide in this part and let us just see glimpses of her power. And in discussing that with her, you know, her eyes were sort of lighting up. I kept getting these flashes, and I was thinking, is she wondering whether she's being complimented or insulted, you know, as I laid this out. But truly what I came to realize it was that she felt she was being challenged. And Shirley is someone who loves a challenge, you know, as most actors do, actually. You give them the opportunity to really push themselves and try something different, and they want it. And Shirley very much wanted to play this character in that way. And I think the results are not only surprising but breathtaking.
As we talk about this, though, I just think about how often films of yours, and this is kind of a recurrent thing too, as I just looked at things getting ready for this, how often your films make us ask questions about physical beauty and about the expectations of physical beauty. It's definitely part of LA Confidential, to some extent The Bedroom Window, to a big extent Bad Influence, and I think a lot of your movies deal with that in some way.
Very interesting. I had not thought about it consciously in terms of the past movie. I certainly thought about it with this picture, because mm-hmm. it speaks very much to the themes, you know, and to the self-image problems and questions that these characters have.
But the way somebody who's extraordinarily striking walks into a room, that impact has been very much a part of the way you've worked in movies and used that kind of power and play with that in some really interesting ways.
Well, it's also so much part of the movie experience,
you know,
because that's what we experience as the audience members, where we sit there in the dark and watch somebody come on screen, whether it's somebody we've never seen before or not, and we just are knocked back by the visual impression that they make. You know, that's what movie stars are about. That's how stars are born.
It absolutely is. But I just have to ask if that's one of the things that attracts you to making certain kinds of movies, the idea of having somebody who does convey that kind of charisma and that kind of hypnotic power that physical beauty conveys.
And then to question it.
Yeah.
You know, especially in this era of celebrity worship. What is illusion? What lurks behind that facade that we're so admiring?
But that's very much kind of a noir thing too.
Yes,
you go back to
yes,
Out of
indeed.
The Past or movies, yeah. Almost anything Sam Fuller did were basically somebody's look and the sort of consequences of that look are integral to the material. And that's been kind of key to the way you've worked too.
Well, that was very much the impetus behind my selection of James Ellroy's novel, L.A. Confidential, I was longing to do an L.A. story from the period of Los Angeles of my childhood memory.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really wanted to deal with was this city of illusion, city of manufactured illusion, and the difference between the illusion and the reality. And that comes from being a kid growing up in this city that I would see on the television screen at night and see it in the daytime, the real scene, and also see them naturally on the street shooting. And when I read that particular book of Ellroy's, where it featured these cops who seemed to have one foot in the world of police work and the other foot in the world of show business, I saw that as the springboard. It's, you know, again, it's the city of manufactured illusion, and it was the chance to say, what does it mean, and what does it mean to the people that are part of it, and both perpetrators of it and in a sense victims of it.
But somewhat to that, the tyranny of looks and how intrusive or seductive or both it can be is just such a fascinating part of the movies you make and how people are fooled by it and what's beneath that, sort of poking at surfaces.
Well, and how people can be fooled themselves by it. You know, there's a brief scene in Her Shoes where Cameron Diaz's character goes on this MTV interview. And she is completely full of herself and confident because she looks great. And she so visually represents kind of everything that is admired in a certain part of our society today. You know, her hair looks great, her body looks great, her clothes are magnificent. And she walks in cocky and just sure of herself. And then she sees she has to read. And you just see all of that self-confidence melt away and turn into fear, insecurity, and even self-loathing. And to have Cameron do that and do it as well as she does is almost sufficient motivation for me to make the movie.
Wow. We'll take a break. We'll come back. My guest is Curtis Hanson. His new film is In Her Shoes. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. My guest is director Curtis Hanson, writer-director Curtis Hanson. Although this time, he's merely, and I use that word advisedly, director Curtis Hanson. His new film is In Her Shoes. You are maybe the only director who uses movies in a really meta kind of way. I mean, and use the medium of film to comment on people's lives. Just looking at your entire body of work to prepare for this, it really kind of struck me in that way. I even go back to some ways to White Dog and working with Sam Fuller. And it played theatrically in Detroit, where I'm from, so I saw it when I was in college. And to see that movie with a black audience who knew nothing about it was really kind of amazing. But it's also a movie that basically digs beneath the surface and tries to ask the question, can people change? Can things be changed? In this case, actually, can an animal be changed? And it deals with another surface, which is racism.
Yes, and dealt with it so beautifully thematically in terms of racism as something that is learned. And as you say, raises the question, can it be unlearned?
Yeah, exactly. How did you get involved with that movie?
Well, I got involved with it because I'd written a script called The Silent Partner.
Which is a great movie.
Oh, thank you, Elvis. Thank you. And it was a script that people liked. And
with a great score, by the way, by Oscar Peterson.
Yes, indeed. As a music fan, just an aside, it was such a thrill, actually, to meet Oscar Peterson and be able to be at the side of his piano as he fiddled around and came up with the themes.
You were there when he was putting the
yes,
score together?
Yeah, a little bit. I was able to stop in. I gave myself that opportunity to stop by. I mean, there was talk about your giants, you know, in their field of endeavor. That man was just amazing. Anyway, that script of The Silent Partner was well liked, and it was given to Robert Evans, who was going to produce White Dog. And at the time, the thought was Roman Polanski was going to direct it, who obviously had done Chinatown with Robert Evans. And so I wrote the script, and coincidentally, Sam Fuller was a close friend of mine. And years went by. Polanski could never come back into the country. I tried everything I could to actually get the script so that I could direct it and could just never get that opportunity. And they had a director that they were not enthusiastic about, and I just said, what about Sam Fuller? And Don Simpson, who was running production at Paramount at the time, said, great. And would you work with him? And I said, I'd work with him. Would he work with me? Because you know, I love Sammy, but he was never a collaborator, certainly not a co-writer. But I ended up working with Sam on a new script. Had some of the structure of my original draft, but basically it was a whole new deal. Collaborating with him was just one of the great thrills of my professional life, because I was such a fan of his from such an early age. And in fact, when I think back to the filmmakers who made me first aware that there was somebody behind the camera telling the story, Sam Fuller was one of them, along with Hitchcock and John Ford and so forth. And then it just all turned to you know, because the movie got tainted because people assumed that the movie was racist because it dealt with this racist dog, when, of course, the opposite was true. And the studio got frightened and literally shelved the movie. You know, as you say, it opened in a couple of markets. They tested it, Detroit being one. I saw it up in Seattle. And then they shelved it.
It's The Treatment. We're talking to Curtis Hanson. His new film, by the way, is In Her Shoes. But we're talking, and all these movies lend themselves to this theme of pulling at surfaces or playing or starting with a surface and giving us an ostensible reaction to something and then forcing us to ask a question about that.
It's fascinating because in life, we do the same thing, and then we often find out that our impressions are wrong if we have the opportunity or are forced to spend more time with the individual that we formed a snap judgment about.
Because I guess when I think about movies and the way you've used this in movies, and these filmmakers we're talking about who use them, is they deal with the fact that we want to like movie stars, or we want to like the characters we see on the screen because they're so much bigger than us. And filmmakers, you being one of these guys, understand the emotional attachment we make to these characters. So offering us that and then spinning that around, that seems like just a perfect way to make the world of illusion or our reactions to a surface a part of the experience.
Well, we do want to be movie stars, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons that movies are the best window into the time and place that they were made that we have, because we get to see literally what people, not so much what they actually looked like and how they dressed and how they walked and so forth, but what they wished they did. And we get to see how it's changed from country to country and over the different eras. You know, you go back to the silent movies and the fantasy was quite different than it was in the 30s and then quite different again from the 50s.
I guess, and we're talking to Curtis Hanson, his new film is In Her Shoes, because the book and this movie too deal so much with this need we have to sort of cloak ourselves in something to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. So much of that is even the way people dress in your movies. I mean, there's always somebody who's beautifully outfitted who, again, uses that as a way to sort of to confuse or to make a certain kind of impression. And I'm just fascinated by the way that you seem to love to subvert what it is our first impressions might be.
Well, all the details are the characters, you know, as it is in life, you know, how people dress tells us a great deal about them. And in making a movie, I try to approach all those details with from a character point of view, you know, and I'm not one who hires department heads and sort of lets them just go do their thing, as it were. Mm-hmm. We talk a great deal about the specific character, and we talk about the colors and what they mean to that character and what they mean to the overall picture. And then they are encouraged to restrict their creativity to within those parameters.
Sure.
And what I find is that rather than limiting them, it actually encourages their creativity, because once they know that we're all in a sense playing notes from the same page, they're able to move ahead with greater confidence. And, you know, a character like Maggie, Cameron Diaz's character, she literally carries her entire wardrobe in a plastic garbage bag. And yet she looks great when she's wearing those garments that she got for very little money. The idea was that she picked them up at a thrift store and borrowed or stole one from her sister, that kind of thing. And so they had to be picked very, very carefully, because I hate it when the illusion or the reality, the illusion of reality is broken in a movie and suddenly somebody's wearing something they shouldn't be wearing. And Cameron's clothes all would fit in that bag. And in fact, what she does is she mixes and matches to make them last for the whole movie. And then, of course, the actor is very involved in that.
Sure.
Because they have to feel good and they have to feel truthful in what they wear.
One of the things that I really love about your movies is the kind of specificity, and you were just talking about it here a little bit, but it lends itself to the creation of that environment, doesn't it, by just setting these parameters. And, for example, giving us a chance to see the way these two women sort of become different just in terms of the way they dress by the end of the movie.
Yes. Well, it's all thematic, Elvis. You know, everything plays into the themes of the story that you're trying to tell. And in this particular movie, you know, part of the attraction of the locations was that the story is sort of bifurcated between Philadelphia and Florida. And we tried to create those two worlds as vividly as possible to show the difference between them, in the same way that the two sisters appear to be very different. But the point being, as the audience learns, is that the human concerns underneath those outward appearances are exactly the same in both worlds, mm-hmm. regardless of the age of the people that inhabit that world.
So the treatment, my guest is Curtis Hanson. We're talking about his new film as director, In Her Shoes. I'm wondering, too, because we're talking about the differences between movie stars and actors who certainly are talented but don't yet kind of have that – the weight or the iconic presence of a movie star. If you feel that working with a movie star really – because you're talking about parameters you have to work in – open things up for you in this case, because you did have on the one pole Cameron Diaz and the other side you had Shirley MacLaine, who people think a certain thing of as soon as they see them. If that really helped you in some ways.
Well, it helped with Cameron in both ways. You know, as I say, her being my partner helped get the movie made. And secondly, her letting it be known the degree of trust that she had in me eliminated a lot of potential questions that the studio might have had about the look and feel of the movie, because it does not present Cameron in the sort of glossy way that we're expected to see. And you know, she wears makeup, but the makeup is meant to be makeup that Maggie put on.
But it also comments on that glossiness of Cameron.
Exactly. And the makeup is not meant to be the best makeup in the world. It's meant to be the makeup that this particular character puts on to create an impression. I love the idea that young people, especially who are fans of Cameron Diaz, will see her in this role and see the journey that she makes and see how she learns life's lessons when she gets all of that stuff stripped away and is actually wearing hospital scrubs and tennis shoes and engaging with that blind professor. You know, I think movies sometimes really do have the power to influence people, especially young people. And the fact that there will be impressionable fans of Cameron that will see this movie, fans who like her for a certain set of reasons, and then suddenly see the way she blossoms when she reads a poem and is able to discuss the poem. To have that message out there in the land was sufficient reason for me to want to make this movie.
I guess, do you find, actually this is the last question, because you've done this so often with movie stars or people with iconic presences, do they like playing against type a little bit? Are they tickled a little bit by sort of subverting themselves with what people think of them, what audiences think of them?
Yes. I think they like it and I love it. You know, in casting, I try to do it not only as the director finding somebody who can play the part, but also as a moviegoer who likes to be surprised. And I love it when an actor that I think I know very well does something that surprises me and makes me reevaluate their talent. Or conversely, I like it when an actor that I don't know at all comes on the screen and knocks me out. You know, that's again where I feel I've been so blessed in casting opportunities to have had, for example, Russell Crowe and Guy Pearce when they were more or less unknown in the marketplace, and I could just show them off for the first time and have the audience accept them completely as cops in 1953 without any baggage, without any movie star thing of look at so-and-so wearing period clothes and do we believe him then? And at the same time, to have someone like Shirley MacLaine that we think we know well present herself in a surprising light and then blossom into the strength that we expect from her and to also blossom into a sensuality that she has kept completely hidden in the course of the movie.
Well, that's a great place to end it. Curtis, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Elvis.
My guest is Curtis Hanson. His new film as director is In Her Shoes. Our technical director is Bob Carlson with technical assistance at Radio Arts New York from Seth Wendt. Mary Holdridge produces the program. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
You've been listening to KCRW's The Treatment. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Business, a look deep inside the business of entertainment with Hollywood's top dealmakers, filmmakers, moguls, artists, and agents, hosted by Claude Brodesser. Check out the podcast of The Business at kcrw.com.